Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Hello, everyone. It's Tuesday, which means it's a new episode of Kill Me Now. I've never said that before, that we drop on Tuesdays. I drop pretty much all the fucking time because I'm so fucking tired. I'm very excited about our guest today, and not because he's funny and not because, you know, he's gay. It's none of these things that you think I'm going to be excited to talk to him for. I don't know what that sentence was, but he'll correct me because he's a teacher. He is a fucking teacher. I come from a family of teachers. No job I respect more than teaching. The intersection, which is a word I fucking hate, but I'm going to say it anyway, of teaching and comedy is so amazing. Like people, I don't think people realize that our next act, I'm not on stage, our guest would not be as great of a comedian as he is if he wasn't a teacher. And great comedians are teachers. And my hair looks like shit. And I'm going to tell you why in just a few minutes, but you're listening so you don't see that my hair looks like shit. But check your Instagram. My hair looks like fucking shit. On one side, it's completely flat. And then the other side, it's all like, hey, what's going on? I'm not kidding. It's like a total psycho. This part is like depressed. I'm like bipolar. My hair is bipolar. Oh God, everyone who's bipolar. I'm really sorry. Don't cancel me. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, wait, I'm going to say his full name. Joseph Bernard Dombrowski.
Woo! Oh, she went back into the vault.
I went back to the vault.
I love it.
Joe Dombrowski. Before we begin, I just want to complain. You know, it's called Kill Me Now because basically I say Kill Me Now about 600 times a day. And, you know, the other day, one of my sons said to me,
we were talking about something. He's like, yeah, I know. I want to kill myself. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh. So I was like, oh my God, I've done a really good job. So see,
my kill me now is, I always say, I just want to drink a gallon of bleach. And someone tried to come for me for it the other day. And I was like, you don't know how almost serious I am.
Right. People don't get it. They don't work in comedy. We're recording this on a Friday, the Friday of my son's 25th birthday, my older son. On Wednesday, I worked 15 hours, then got driven to the airport and took a red eye home from LA. I'm not complaining. I'm happy to be working. I took a red eye and I got off the plane. And all I was doing on the plane was, like, I had a good seat, right? I'm not complaining about my seat, but I am 6'2". I'm all legs. I can't, even with the flatbed, it doesn't work because there's a fucking, I can't. Yes, I'm complaining. Yes. So I didn't really sleep. Plus I have this, like, here's the thing. Like I mean, it's the red eye. It was leaving at 1 a.m. and I was still like, oh, well, I get food. Like, I wasn't even hungry.
Right.
But they were giving the food. So I'm like, I'll have a panini. And it sucked. And I was eating it. And I was like, I don't even want this. But it was like, they're serving food and I'm taking it. So anyway, I got off the plane. I realized my phone wasn't with me. I was sitting on the carousel and the whole time I was dreaming, all right, you know what? I'm going to go home. I have 2 hours I can sleep before I go to New Jersey for another gig, right? Mm-hmm. Grateful, hashtag grateful. I sit on the carousel, right? And I'm like, oh, I'll text the driver, not my own driver. I call the fucking car service assholes and just let them know, you know, I landed. And there's no phone in my bag. And it's just like, no, no. I like checked. I even helped the woman in front of me, dropped her wallet. I was like, oh, you dropped your wallet. Like, I'm a good person. I'm a good person. I go into the, you know, the baggage thing where you have there. I tried to go back up to the gate and they were like, no, you can't go. I'm like, no, please no. And then, the tears will begin. I can't cry over like, you know, oh, I'm feeling sad today. That won't ever happen. But I can cry if I lose my keys or my phone. So, because I'm really healthy. So I go into the baggage area where I've been many times. I'll just say at JFK, I've been there multiple times in my life. As you know, you travel. You know, so I go in and it's just like, it just starts because I'm so tired.
Mm-hmm.
I left my phone on the plane and, oh my God, I never do this. I just can't believe it. She's like, don't worry. I mean, like, so nice. And she's like, we'll call the gate. And I'm like, faster, faster. You're not dialing fast. Like, it was like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm like,
yes.
You don't understand. I have to go to sleep. I only have it. Now I'm down to an hour and a half. So she's like, they're not answering. And then this other girl comes in, this woman. Well, she's a girl because I'm 58. So everyone's a girl. So she comes in. And she says, we need to get our luggage off the plane because my aunt died. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And for a minute, like, I was like, okay, death, lost phone. You know, like, I did that thing.
Which is death.
Right. So then that I was like, oh, okay, this is a sign. And then after, like, maybe 45 seconds, I was like, fuck, I don't care. I don't care. Maybe she was sick. Maybe they, you know, like, as long as she didn't die on the plane.
And maybe she was a bad person.
Right. She wasn't even crying. So it's like, so then I went back to crying about my phone. So then I have to go wait for the person. She's taking too long. I think she's never coming back. I literally, if I could show you my phone, I pressed find my iPhone so she would find it on the plane.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Did she find it?
Well, she eventually found it and she's like, oh, it was ringing and I wanted to pick it up. But I, you know, and I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. And so that was my kill me now moment of this week. And then I call Elisa, my lover. And she's like, Judy, you always leave something. I'm like, I don't always leave something, but I kind of like, I've done this a million times. And you know, when you travel all the time, you forget like, oh, where am I going? Okay, because you've put your phone in your bag so many times, you think you put your phone in your bag.
Okay, you said something that made me think that we're very similar on this. You said when you were talking to the gate agent, you're like, I only have an hour and a half to sleep. Do you count your days as in how long I have to sleep? Because I definitely do.
It's all about how long I have to sleep and food.
Oh, 100%. And what drives me nuts is I'm done with the show and I just want to eat something. And all that's open is like a friggin' Bojangles and maybe a Wendy's.
It's, well, you know, that's the problem about where you live. You know, I'm in New York, so as you know. But no, I'm just saying, like, yeah, when I'm on the road, like, people don't realize after your show, you're fucking starving.
Yeah.
And it's 11 o'clock at night or whatever it is. It's your dinner time.
It is my dinner time. I just, this is my unwind, and there's nothing for my unwind. There's not even good shows on right now. It's like, just let me be.
Okay. Don't complain about good shows because you're 14 and you have streaming services, which I didn't have. Okay. So shut the fuck up. All right.
I'm 12, Judy.
Okay. Sorry. I hope you get your period soon. All right. So Joseph Bernard Dombrowski, like I don't know if you've ever listened to my podcast. I doubt it, but I do a lot of research on my guests and you're a fucking hard egg to crack. Okay.
What'd you get, babe?
I got some things. I got that your mother's name is Fran. Your father's name is Ronald.
Sure did. Yeah. You're on the right track.
That's right. Well, everyone knows because you have a podcast with your mother that your mom said, but does everyone know your father's name is Ronald?
I think they might. Oh, they fuck might.
You. Okay. You're Michigan born and bred.
That's right.
Your parents, thank God, are older than me.
They are.
Thank the Lord that they are older than me because I can't with the interviewing people who I could be their parents. Okay. You were born May 1st, 1989.
Wrong.
You were born not May 1st, 19. What the fuck is that?
You're one day off, April 30th, 1989.
You fuck!
We were doing great. You know what? I'll give it to you. Either way was still a Taurus. So there you go.
Right. Okay. Here's the thing.
Hit
You're
me.
An only child.
Painfully no? only. Painfully, yes,
painfully
only,
only
child.
So you grew up. We always start at the very beginning. It's a very,
very good,
good
place
to
start.
Very. All right.
One so of you, the first shows that I ever did, actually.
Really?
Friedrich von Trapp in the flesh.
Wow. Right here.
Yeah. Community theater, babe.
It's too bad that you don't remember my bit. I used to do a bit, which I think the listeners who know my old material will know that I used to stand. I could still do it. I used to stand on stage in front of the curtain, you know, and in the middle of my set go, the Von Trapp family singers.
Yep.
The family Von Trapp. And then look at my watch and be like, they're coming. And then go back to my act and then do it again in 5 minutes. I used to do that throughout my act.
I love it.
But I haven't done that in a while and I might do it again. Okay.
Bring it out. So, bring it back.
So you were born in Michigan. You are an only child of two parents. Do you know why you're the only child?
So I was not meant to be.
Right.
Was not meant to be. There was one that didn't make it shortly after.
Oh, I'm glad I could bring that up. And
no, it's all good. It's open. It's out there. But
yeah.
We said that it was kind of not a terrible thing because I'm pretty sure that I would have just eaten that sibling alive.
Right. Were you born in Royal Oak, Michigan?
No, I was actually born in Detroit.
That's right. I have that from Detroit.
Now, this is the funny thing. When I started like coming up in the Detroit scene, a lot of it was in Royal Oak, which is where I was living at the time. So people started to say, you're not from Detroit. And I was like, check my birth certificate, bitch.
You
like,
fucking asshole.
I think I know my life.
Yeah. So you were born in Detroit. But I got to say something.
Hit me.
I love Detroit. I love.
Thank you.
Detroit. I've always loved Detroit. Of course, I know a lot of people in Bloomfield Hills. Is that?
Yeah, you do. Or West Bloomfield.
West Bloomfield.
Which is where my first teaching job was in West Bloomfield. And I was like, can we get like all of Yom Kippur off?
You do get all of Yom Kippur off because it's only a day. Okay. Now, there are also a lot of Holocaust survivors there, and there was an ACLU march that was going to happen there that ended up, or no, that was somewhere else, that they were going to let Nazis walk through, but that was somewhere else. That was not in Detroit. But anyway, Detroit is a great city. And now it's like the food paradise, right?
Yes, yes, it
is. And people are buying land there, and it's where Motown started. It's where the cars were. It's a fucking great city.
I got a crazy fact for you. So yeah. There's this, it's considered like a rare gem, but it's not at all. But what it is it's actually chunks of paint from one of the car factories, and there's layers and layers and layers of all different colors, and they take the chunks and they polish it, and it's like this awesome, really cool piece that they put into jewelry and stuff. Only comes out of Detroit, only comes from the old car factories, and it's considered like a precious gem.
What about Shinola watches?
You want me to go grab mine? Like,
I want to get one so bad.
Oh, you have to do it. I love my Shinola watches. The Shinola Hotel is to die for. Next time you're in Detroit, that's where you're staying.
What is that? Can I just say something though?
Yeah, say it.
These companies that like you make watches and then you open a fucking hotel. It's like, you know what I mean? And it's also like that Margaritaville song. It's a fucking song, and now he's a multi-billionaire because it's a fucking spa restaurant resort, you know?
Isn't it what this one? It's really it's kitsch, boutique, chic. Right. It's very Detroit too. It's very, right. They like pay homage to the city, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And okay. Great food. There's an amazing restaurant underneath.
And you better be on time for your reservation. Okay. So that was a watch joke, people. So this is how I conduct my interviews when I've had no sleep.
Hey everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York. Okay, I don't even have a yard outside, and it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees, and whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information, and it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
So you're an only child. Your parents both work, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You go to public school?
I started at private Catholic school until third grade, and it was a real treat. There was no hiding me gay ever.
Right.
So there were times, this is true, I was actually put in the coat closet. My desk was moved into the coat closet for about a week. And there's like no rhyme or reason other than I was fabulous.
And this is in Catholic school?
This is at Catholic school.
So they put you in the closet.
Put me in.
So that's
put
great.
Me, I know. I know. Two more weeks than I ever needed to be in there.
You came out of the closet in third grade. Good night, folks. God damn it. I'm on fire. So why did you get put in the closet?
I was a lot, but mm-hmm. not in a bad way. I was just an extroverted kid and right. was fabulous. I was
of
fabulous.
Course.
And there was like, my cousins all say, we knew you were gay when you were born. Right. So looking back on this, these situations in retrospect, it was because they just couldn't take it.
Right. But also two things about that. You were gay when you were born. And number one, and number two. So these are nuns that put you in the closet?
They were not nuns. There was only one nun and I did not have her as a teacher. These were
and
just.
And was she a lesbian? They're all lesbies.
Guaranteed.
They're all lesbies fingering each other. I'm telling you.
All of them. Scissor me timbers up and down that place. It was wild.
Were you into being Catholic? Like, first of all, for a gay kid, I would think. You know, the dressing up and the, you know, the incense and all that shit. Like, that would be like, oh, I want to, like, in the beginning.
And okay.
The pageantry would be like something you'd be into. And then you realize, oh, fuck, this is crazy. But yeah. Was
my very first time being a theatrical human, I played a shepherd in the nativity scene at church. I swear to God, everybody's jaw dropped because I strutted down with my like shepherd's staff and my robe down the aisle, just like I was on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like just, it was like,
right,
done.
Right, right.
And everyone's like, he has to go. And I remember feeling it even, you know, but.
Just feeling but like you were different.
Oh yeah, totally ostracized.
Right, same. But I feel like sometimes that feeling that you were feeling is because, you know, people don't realize we're born this way. Mm-hmm. We feel differently than other people, but we don't know what it is until we go through puberty. Like that's what people don't realize. So for those years where you're like, wait, what? And then you go, oh, you know, it's a lonely place to be and you need to be in the coat closet. And you're so. Was it a co-ed Catholic school?
It was a co-ed Catholic school, co-ed everything except for gym. And it was highly, highly, highly underfunded, the school,
right.
too. So every day just trying to like navigate it was, I never felt comfortable there ever. But, you know, my parents both went through Catholic school their entire life. They just thought they were doing what we do in that side of the world.
Right. Was either of your parents into the Catholic religion, one of them more than the other, or both, or?
We were bad Catholics.
All right,
bad,
that's
always,
good to know.
You know, like ate meat during Lent, like did the whole thing, but they just kind of like went on to it in their heteronormative lives that they didn't know anything other than that. But the cool thing was like shit started to get bad. Like it started to get really uncomfortable and a public elementary school was built literally in our backyard. And they were like, not only is this convenient, but all the kids in the neighborhood will go to this school. Let's try it.
Right. And then you'll have friends in the hood. But what do you remember most about being a Catholic?
Christmas.
That's it?
just being over the top.
Like, you had a uniform, right?
Oh, yeah. I had a uniform. It was always a mess. I always get in trouble for not wearing a belt because I'm like riddled with ADHD, too.
Oh,
so I was never, I know you have to, but I remember that. I remember I was in trouble all the time, but I wasn't a bad kid. Like I was a people pleaser. And even at that time, I realize it now, I was trying to be funny as the deflection as a lot of gay comics.
It's a coping mechanism.
100%.
As a teacher, I just have this question because I've had this with many parents. What do you think is better? Uniform? Or no uniform?
God. I've taught in both situations. And sometimes at a very young age, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of not realizing what's going on. Yeah.
Right.
But I do see beauty in like when you're a little bit older and the creative expression of like being who you just are. But even then it's kind of like, are you really who you are? Like who's buying these clothes? It's not
right,
you.
Right, right.
No, no, no. So I've noticed the differences too. And it's just kind of like, I don't really know. I can't say that one is better or one is worse. It really matters on where you're at. Like public school, a lot of the times, seeing that difference in
socioeconomic,
is detrimental to a lot of people. And the crime in this country is the fact that public education funding is just wrong. And you have these schools right next to an underprivileged school that are just booming and have everything they need. And those kids go to school with the same kids in the same community. It's like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah. I for many different reasons, I have multiple opinions on it. I mean, you know, I was 6 feet at 13. I never had the same clothes. My mother had to make my clothes. I couldn't buy shoes. They didn't have my shoe size. You know, like, so for someone with an odd body, it's really hard. But it's true, the socioeconomic, and then also being a parent and like having to fuck. Well, I had boys, but I can't even imagine, you know, having to deal with that kind of, you know, pressure and stuff like that. So I don't know. But then I hate uniforms because like, whatever.
Uniformity. So. Yeah. The best time was when I taught kindergarten. It was the best when they were all uniformed because kindergarten parents are always buying these nonsense clothes that have like toys built in.
Right.
Big fluffy things or like mermaid sequins that go both ways. Right. It's like, I don't need them distracted by anything else.
Right.
Please. So it worked out really well there.
So you go to public school. Are you popular?
Almost instantly. My mom said that the first day that I came home from public school, she said it was like the Wizard of Oz where everything changed to color. And I was just, she could like see the happiness and the creativity. And that was third grade when I started public school. And that was my very first set. I was a stand-up comic for my third grade talent show that year.
And what, so that's 1996, maybe seven?
Yeah.
89 and 1997. Okay. So you do stand up. Do you remember?
Yeah, I stole all my bits. I stole all my bits. So couple things here. Grew up in a comedy family, specifically was just drawn to a lot of lesbian comics. Like my mom, you'll find this interesting, in the house all the time was the Rosie O'Donnell show, always. I do know that, yes.
I'm sorry, are those my Emmys from the Rosie O'Donnell show right there? Okay.
Where are they at? Where are they at?
They're right there.
Yeah.
They're right there.
Yes, yeah.
Wait,
all the time. I specifically one time remember we were watching the show. We would drive down to Disney World and there was a TV in our van, you know, those big TVs. And we were watching the Rosie show with Tom Cruise and everything.
Yeah.
And my mom was just cracking up, rewinding, watching these jokes over and over. Grew up watching Ellen's set, which was the biggest full circle thing ever. And then Kathy Griffin was one of the first acts that I saw live. My parents took me to see her when I was very little. She was pretty clean at the time. And she did these bits on like combing Barbie's hair between her legs and the head falling off. And we were just, I was so drawn to like powerful women in comedy that I wanted to emulate that. So I was a little sassy, a little doing my thing, but all my jokes I stole from a magician in town.
No.
Yes. And then I just twisted them to kind of like make them my own a little bit, but had no idea that you don't do that. It was the first thing I ever did.
Well,
and I was eight. So, but it was cool. And it's crazy to watch the footage back. My goal is, so I walk on stage and the first thing I say, I'm in a suit. I made my mom get a suit for me. And I walk out in the suit and I say, hi, I'm Joey Dombrowski and I'm going to be your comedian for the night. And what I want is for my first special, I want it to be that footage that fades into
me. Oh, that's great. That's
great. As an adult. Yeah, I really want that.
Okay. That's very good. I love that idea. That's so funny about the Rosie show. And you know, they just did an article in New York Magazine about it because it's 25 years old. And, or was it Vulture? It might've been Vulture, but, I was quoted because I often would say, if everyone in the country knew that this is a show being put on by a bunch of gay people and their friends and their allies. Like, it could change the world, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a phenomenon. And it was gay kids. That it was such a great, it was really one of the happiest times of my life. I had so much fun.
Really cool to watch, too. And another full circle moment. Rosie, Cat in the Hat and Seussical. Me, Cat in the Hat, my high school musical.
Oh, my God. And it rhymes.
There we go.
So it's interesting being a gay kid, a flamboyant gay kid, going to public school in the late 90s and being accepted. Because this is the first time this is happening anywhere, at any time in this country. You realize how lucky you are. And having parents who accept you. And I mean, did you ever have to come out to them? Or
yes. It took years to be sunshine and rainbows, what it is today. You know, they, you know, definitely were, it was ingrained in them because of their Catholicism.
Right.
Bad. So they were protecting me from going to hell and like didn't want this for me. So it took a lot of explaining and my uncle is gay, my mom's brother.
Right.
So us
and they knew that
together, they did know that. And we had very different experiences, but kind of seeing that he's okay in the world and I will too. It was just all fear. It was fear.
You know, it is fear because, you know, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, you know, like the choice was be ostracized, not be unemployable, lose your family, die. For so many of my friends, it was like, you know, the AIDS crisis really, no one could hide anymore. I mean, it was really a catalyst for where we are today.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people of that generation thought it was going to be a horrible, sad life, you know, a lonely life. And it's not. And, you know, you're really, really lucky. You're really lucky that you were born when you were born. And I think that all the time. And I hope that you tell your friends who are gay that, because I feel like a lot of young gay men and women, but mostly men, don't appreciate the, you know, the shoulders that they're standing on of so many amazing people who are dead because of this horrible plague and they're not safe. And it really pisses me off. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's like, oh, I'll just take PrEP or whatever the fuck it is and do whatever I want. No, look at the AIDS Memorial Instagram page. I check it every day. You see what the world, you don't have no idea how many people we lost. So you need to share that message because it really bothers me. Okay. So you're very popular. And also, I don't think if you were a lesbian, you would have been popular like that.
Yeah. I'm going to say I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that there was definitely just like weird shit still going on at that time.
Right.
And just like you said too, this is kind of like the first time that like kids being out in high school is like a thing.
Right.
And you know, there was definite, the craziest part is that my circle was all fine with this too. But then there were still pockets. I went to school. I graduated with almost 2,000 kids in my class. Right. Like it was nuts.
Yeah.
So there were haters who would try to say some shit or start some shit. But these band of friends would do all the counteracting for me, which I also realize is a huge privilege because this was also the first time that other students feel like what he is fine and fuck you.
Right. And fuck you.
Yeah,
right.
Which was cool.
Did you, so the people who were your, you know, your allies there, was it male and female?
Predominantly female.
Yeah, that's what for I
sure.
Yeah.
For sure, obviously. But I did have two very good, close, straight guy friends who were definitely straight, but met through theater. And they also didn't give a fuck. And they would come to bat too, and they saw it right away, which I was super grateful for. Now, it's kind of weird because I still have this, if I'm in a group, oh God, like if I go into a set, I'm the only gay guy and it's a bunch of straight guys. I am like not myself when I'm in the green room and stuff because it's just ingrained in me, you know? It's like you don't know because when that happens to you when you're a little kid.
Right. But imagine being a black kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, we know we're gay and that we feel uncomfortable, but you imagine, you know, someone walks in and they are a person of color and immediately.
Absolutely.
It's like, you're the other, these people, you know, I think about that all the time, but so it's interesting how that internalized homophobia or feeling of like being out of place stays with you forever. It stays with you forever. And it's also, I call it out because that's the only way I can deal with things. I'm like, okay. Yep. And like, I've been to parties of people and I'm like, you live in New York City and you have no gay friends. Like, I'm not okay with this. You have no people of color friends. Sorry. There's something wrong here.
How's
you
live it possible?
In, you know?
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
So I assume you were in the theater department. Did you ever have like the straight football player? Like, did you ever have the guys approach you like, listen, don't you fucking tell anyone. I want you to suck my dick.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It was great.
Oh, my God. Tell me.
Oh, it was everything. Everything.
Yes, I need to know.
Multiple. Probably at least five.
And they were like really popular, like jockey.
Really just like, and there was like one who my other gay friend, he was fucking. And I like, wow. He like confided in me and told me. And I was like, I want a little piece of that. So I went and kind of like planted my little seed. I got mine. It was great. But then it was always, this is the part that fucks with you too. When that happens in high school, they're all in. There was this one guy particularly who was on the soccer team and shit. And he was like in. In my head, Judy, we were dating.
Right. Okay. Right.
Because when we were by ourselves, we were like giggly, laughing, having these moments. And then we'd like hook up and stuff. And as soon as he would blow, it was like, well, you know, I'm not gay, right? Okay, yeah, well, I'll see you later. Like, don't tell anybody. I got to go.
Right.
And then it was like over. And I was like, oh, okay. So your guilt's going to hit in?
Right.
That is trauma.
Right,
especially when you get feelings.
Right, you have to. I've been on the other end of that too, where you're like with someone, they're like, "No, I'm straight." It's like, "No, you're not straight."
Yeah, yeah.
What did you just do? What do you think that is? Like,
there's
I'm an old gay, but it's like every gay guy I know has a story about the straightest person in school and them. You know, blowing each other.
Well, you know, it still happens too.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Straight guys all the time. All the time.
But do you believe they're straight? Or do
I don't. Now, here's the thing. This is at a time to... Okay, I never have been attracted to women. I've never wanted to. I've never have. And at that time...
Gold star
gay.
Yay.
At that time, it was you're gay or you're straight, and nobody was really buying into bisexuality.
Now, when
I look back at these times and these experiences, I truly believe that a couple of these guys were bi. One, I think, is gay and was just in this super Middle Eastern family where he could never, and will never, and is married now. And I'm convinced that he's gay, but the others, I'm like, I think they're bi, and that's fine, but like nobody talked about bi. Talked about or even discussed it. It wasn't an option.
Are any of them with men now?
Let's see. One did come out.
Fascinating.
So fascinating.
You know that a lot of them will come out in their 50s.
Which is wild. There's one that it's like he's married and he has kids, and I'm just like, this is wild. Okay, Judy, there's another one from college who we go hard, right?
Right.
But it never got weird, ever. Even after, we'd still hang out, laugh, just go back to being friends, and it was great. And even still, he's married, and he'll like, doesn't want to do it again, admits that, but will like joke about it with me, and he's like totally fine with it. And he's like, it happened, whatever. It's like, whatever. Now he's married, they have a kid, and he's just like, yeah. Like, that was something that
But what
did.
Do you think these wives, like, I just wonder, did they get laid? Do they, are they just like,
that one she did. I know for sure she did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, they have kids. Okay. So you graduate high school and wait, you go to Central Michigan University.
I did. Fun fact. I wanted to pursue arts and entertainment immediately. And my parents were like, we don't know. That's not our, we're in Michigan. Right, we don't know that life. So they were like, no, like you have to pick something else and then like bank on your talent and harness it through community theater, like doing other theater, but don't major in it. So that's kind of what happened there. So this is kind of where teaching starts getting the seed planted.
Right. So my parents, as one, all they wanted was for me to be a teacher. And it's interesting because as a child and as a parent, as I and as someone who chose this wonderful business of show, I feel like I always, like I know people who were like, my daughter wanted to major in art. And I was like, no, you can't. And I was like, why would you do that? Like, why would you do that? And I think it's always wrong. But in your case, and I have never felt this ever before, I feel like it was like divine intervention. In a way, because
couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Right. This is the first time I am ever saying that because of what you do. And we'll get to that in part
two. I really appreciate you saying that too, because a lot of people, I just stopped. This is like the first year that I've actually, I stopped before then the pandemic happened, lost everything, went back to teaching. So this is the first year that I'm really not teaching. And this is the first time that I feel like a lot of comics take me seriously because, you know, for so long, how people are like, oh, you have a day job. All right. Yeah. You're not a comic. And I'm like, you don't understand two things. One, I love it. I love teaching just as much as I love comedy. And this is so fun for me. And two, it is literally making me better. Not the content, not the stories, not what's happening. Being in the classroom is making me a better comic every single day.
Well, first of all, the material, you know, like
speaks for itself.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember Andy Kaufman, who would go and like take a job as a cab driver just to, you know, be in the world. You know, like you have to be in the world.
Yeah.
And don't ever let a comic say you're not a real comic. You know, supporting yourself during the day and doing stand, there's nothing wrong with that.
At all.
You're a comic because you sit around you sleep until 3 p.m. and complain and that you have no money and, you know, no, sorry.
Yeah.
That always pissed me off because I always, until I could afford it, I was a typesetter and I would work during the day to make enough money for health insurance and then go out. Like taking care of yourself, there's nothing fucking wrong with that. You can't say the person's not an artist. Okay.
Exactly.
So you
let me ask you this. What do you think's up with that? What the fuck do you think is up with that? Because it is still so hardly, and it's so ingrained in the comics.
Right. It's also because it's this idea of suffering. It's this idea of, you know, for my generation, the day you quit your day job was the day you were like, okay, I can pay my rent. It wasn't about you're not a comic, you know, it was about, you know, there's this idea. And it's so funny because there's so many kids who have trust funds. Like you're a comic because your parents are rich. And you don't have to work, like that makes you a better comic. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's this idea that unless you're, you know, it's not like you're not in it 100%. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like so many comics had side jobs or other ways of making money or went into real estate or investing or something. And no, that is an insecurity that is coming from the person saying it. It has nothing to do with the artist because being in the world makes you a better comic.
Yep.
Being a part of the world, being, you know, and that's why when comics, you know, they say, oh, he used to be so funny. And then it's because you're not in the world anymore. You're not dealing with real people anymore. You're believing this bullshit about you. You're a fucking person and you tell jokes.
The first person to really like dig that into me, Lou Ferranda, literally was like from Caroline's. He said, you are doing something different than so many other people.
He says that to me all the time.
Really?
Okay, I will tell you a Louis Ferranda story. I was 19. I was at Rutgers.
This is amazing.
And I had won this contest at school where I got to do 5 minutes with these three comics from Catch a Rising Star, Adrian Tolsch, Bill Shep, and Larry Amrose. And Adrian Tolsch, I've told the story before, was running the open mic nights at Catch a Rising Star. And she's like, these were comics. And they told me I was funny. They were like, no, you are funny. And so I would come, I'm 19. I would come to New York City and literally hang out till 2 or 3 in the morning trying to get on, and I was still a college student. And Lewis was the bartender.
Oh my God.
And he was like, you're going to get on. You're going to get on, Judy. I'm telling you, you're funny. You don't, no one like you. No one like you. And so I don't know why I'm doing the bell, but he then eventually became the guy who was given everyone spots. He did the schedule there. And then he, went to Caroline's. And I've known Lewis since I'm 19 years old. And a lot of people are mad at him or, whatever. They used to love it, because of his position. But he really knows what's funny. Because I remember him. This is the fun. So one time I was in my, early 20s. And by the way, I used to hang out with Joy Behar's daughter because she was in high school.
Yeah.
And Joy would come in and do sets and Eve would come with her. And Eve's half Jewish, so I'll do, a little half a bell. And Eve was the closest one to my age. So I used to like hang out with Eve. But I remember one day I was in my mid-20s maybe. And this kid comes in, he's wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. And he looks like a big slob. And Lewis is like, he's going to be a star. And I'm like, look at him. He's in fucking sweatpants. And he's like, no, he's going to be a big star, Adam Sandler. So Lewis really does know talent. That's so funny. And you do something. The thing about stand-up, you can't compare yourself to anyone because everyone has A, different material, hopefully. B, their own path. I've been doing this since I'm 19. I'm 58. I'm going to be 59 in November. It is a fucking roller coaster. And yeah, you have to learn how to deal with the ups, but you have to learn how to deal with the downs. The ups are poo, poo, poo. You just don't know. You don't know. And the only thing you can control is writing and getting on stage and doing your work and not fucking watching. Oh, that one got that. And that one got that. It's got to be focused on your work. And the thing about you is, and then I'm going to be done kissing your ass, is that you're also doing a service. You're doing a service because teachers need a voice. Comedy is the most palatable way to talk about subversive topics. And you are this incredible voice for what teachers go through. It's great. And think about, I teach too. I actually teach a solo performance class, but think about Ted Alexandro was a teacher. There's a lot of people. And if, the people always ask me in interviews, what would you do if you couldn't do this? Teacher.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with the one and only Joe Dombrowski. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast would not be possible without the help and dedication of Brittany Jo Sowards. I love Joe Dombrowski. I love teachers. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And next week is even more fantastic, if that's possible. So if you love the show, which I don't know how you can't, please subscribe. Please leave a review. Please tell all your friends about it because I need more listeners. And, check me out. Go to my website, judygold.com. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at judygold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm Jewish. Also, this week I will be performing in Provincetown, Massachusetts for Women's Week. And so if you're on the Cape or near the Cape, I have shows Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. I think that would be the 13th, 15th, and 17th, if I'm correct, of October. October 23rd, I'll be in Scarsdale, New York, at Jackie B's at 8:30 p.m., so get your asses there. Going to Florida in November. A little worried about getting the COVID, but, you know, whatever. So, listen, be safe, be well. Get your booster if you need it. Wear a mask. It's going to be over soon, I think. And, you know, I just want people to be nice to each other. I mean, I'm allowed to scream and yell, but just be nice to each other because there's a lot of shit going on. And we need to change everyone's fucking nasty attitude. So thank you so much for listening. I can't thank you enough. If you're still listening right now, I love you even more than ever. Yesterday was National Coming Out Day. Happy coming out! If you're not out and you're scared, I got your back. And, you know, just know you're loved. And happy Indigenous People Day. Well, that was yesterday, too. But whatever. It doesn't matter because who knows what day you're listening to this. So, listen, have a wonderful, wonderful week. I'll be here next week, same time, same place. And as we always say, so long. Ga-ga-ga-ga-ga.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
No.
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.